To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the second annual Know Your City Gala, Untold Stories, on Thursday, November 16th at 5:30 p.m. at the EcoTrust Event Space in Portland. Untold Stories is Know Your City's second annual benefit gala, and it raises essential funds to further Know Your City's programs of engaging everyday Oregonians in the history, culture, and civics of the region. This year's gala will bring together over 150 guests for an unforgettable evening, including hors d'oeuvres, drinks, dessert, performances from local talent, and a paddle raise. Again, that's the second annual Know Your City Gala, Untold Stories, on Thursday, November 16th at 5:30 p.m. at the EcoTrust Event Space, 721 Northwest 9th Avenue, Suite 200 in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Prison Pipeline presents a unique perspective of the criminal justice system, addressing the root causes of crime and broadening understanding of the institution of incarceration.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel?
Good evening. This is Prison Pipeline on KBOO Portland. I'm Karen James. My guests tonight are David Rogers, ACLU of Oregon Executive Director, and Daniel Lukow, Manager of They Report to You, ACLU's new campaign to educate the public about district attorneys, who they are, and how to hold them accountable. Welcome.
Thanks. Thanks for having us.
So, David, this is a new campaign for the ACLU to educate the public about the DAs in their counties. Why this campaign and why now?
Sure. Well, you know, to start with, when we think about why this campaign, we should start with, what do we need to change in the criminal justice system? It's not all working well. In fact, it's worth noting that current criminal justice policy really is one of the largest drivers of inequality in the U.S. today. We've got significant racial disparity in the criminal justice system in terms of how people are sentenced, who's incarcerated. People who are addicted to drugs or experience mental health issues are much more likely to wind up in the criminal justice system. We're spending massive amounts of taxpayer dollars on building and filling prisons. So we have to do better. And so what we realize is one of the ways that we can do better is to start to focus on the most powerful people in the criminal justice system, district attorneys. They're actually an elected official that people know very little about, and they have largely been responsible for the status quo. And so this campaign is about focusing voters on these powerful elected officials. And let me just talk a little bit about who they are and why they're so powerful. You know, if you get arrested, once you're arrested, it is prosecutors in a district attorney's office who have the most influence over what happens to you next. So oftentimes people think of police and judges as the most powerful people in the criminal justice system, but let's be clear. It's prosecutors who get to decide whether or not you're charged or whether or not you go free, how many charges you have, the severity of the charges, whether you get access to treatment or whether or not you go to jail. If you're a young person, whether or not you're kept in the juvenile justice system or whether or not you're charged as an adult. It's prosecutors in the district attorney's office who get to decide whether or not to charge a police officer with misconduct or whether or not to charge the death penalty. They are the most powerful people in the criminal justice system, and we need to begin to understand that and hold them accountable in focused ways if we really want to see significant change in the justice system.
So Daniel, as David said, this is an elected office. So don't the voters hold district attorneys accountable with their vote?
It is an elected office, that's right. And in 36 different counties, every single county elects their own district attorney. And they elect them every 4 years. and nonpartisan races. The issue is that the vast majority of these races are not contested. In 80% of DA elections in the last few years, there was only one person on the ballot. And so voters often don't have a choice or options about what they want their local criminal justice system to look like. So unfortunately, a lot of voters decide not to cast their ballots in these elections. In the last few years, about 1 million Oregonians didn't vote in DA elections. And that means that voters aren't as engaged in these races as they are in other races.
And you also say that the voters don't even know who their district attorneys are in their counties.
A lot of voters don't know who their DAs are in their own counties. And because a lot of voters skip these races, DAs don't spend as much time as other elected officials reaching out to voters, engaging with them, and hearing their voices. What the ACLU Oregon's new campaign They Report to You is aiming to do is to help empower voters to use the tools they have to hold their DAs accountable and to engage with their DAs.
How does the Oregon voter engage or learn about their DAs? With legislators, voters can access their voting records to find out where they stand on the issues. Is there such a thing as a scorecard that voters can access for district attorneys?
That's an excellent question. And I will just say that currently we do not have the level of information that voters across the state really need to be able to discern whether or not their elected DA is doing an adequate job and actually reflects their values. And that's one of the goals of this campaign, is to be able to help produce that kind of information. So although we have a robust level of information on the campaign website, which is www.theyreporttoyou.org, we will slowly but surely add information on there, broken down to specific individual DAs, so people can get a better sense of what they're doing well, and what might be problematic. And so that's the type of thing that it takes research and time, and I think that we'll be adding to it over the course of the next year. Although it is also worth mentioning that it is a great place to go if you have any questions about even who your DA is. You can go and find that out via our website, and you can also actually email your district attorney directly through our website as well.
So, David, you mentioned why you feel the district attorneys are the most powerful people in the criminal justice system. Talk a little bit more about the roles of district attorneys.
Sure. So let's talk a little bit about comparing district attorneys with judges, because oftentimes people think of judges as having a tremendous level of power. But here's the thing. With the proliferation of mandatory minimum sentencing in the U.S. and here in Oregon, the result that mandatory minimum sentencing has, it really transformed the criminal justice system. It took a lot of power out of the hands of judges and into the hands of prosecutors and DAs. And it did that in part because it changed the number of cases that actually get resolved through plea agreements rather than actually going to court. So it's worth noting, here in Oregon, well over 95% of cases never go to trial, okay? And so they're getting resolved through plea negotiations. Now, in that context, it's prosecutors that really have all of the power in terms of how it is they charge to be able to leverage and force people to plea. And so in that context, it just adds another layer, right, when we think about the level of power that they have, in particular, compared to judges.
So this new ACLU campaign, They Report to You, has been met with criticism by district attorneys. Clackamas County District Attorney John Foote put out a press release August 28th accusing the ACLU of transforming into a radical political action committee, he says is inappropriate for a 501c3. He also claims that the ACLU is spreading claims that are false and misleading, and also says that no one is sent to prison for drug addiction and mental illness. Can you respond?
Yeah. Well, first of all, we were in some ways not surprised by the way he responded. But honestly, we expected much better from an elected official and a lead prosecutor for a county in the state. The accusations that somehow we were turning into a radical political action committee was really completely unfounded. And we're a 60-year-old nonprofit that is always been nonpartisan. We do not endorse candidates. We do not have a PAC. We are not developing a PAC in any way, shape, or form. And as a prosecutor, I expect a high bar in terms of having evidence and reason before you accuse people. It was really high levels of defensiveness from District Attorney John Foote. In order to solve the problems facing the state and facing our criminal justice system, we need leadership, not defensiveness. We need people who are willing to acknowledge the problems that exist, talk about the struggle to fix them, talk about what challenges they're facing. But what we got from him was absolute denial that there are any problems in the state's criminal justice system, denial that racial disparity exists, denial that people who are suffering from addiction and mental health issues experience higher rates of incarceration. We have got to have something different and better from our leaders.
And one thing I can add in here is that there was a range of responses when we launched our campaign. There are district attorneys out there who embraced the educational aspect of our campaign and embraced that we were looking to educate voters about who their DAs are and what they do. Some DAs are hoping to use this opportunity to engage in conversations with people in their community.
And it raises a lot of questions. I mean, like, let's take a step back. He's responding in a way that to think that our campaign is somehow controversial. What is controversial about educating voters and trying to increase their engagement with elected leaders?
And can you address this statement in John Foote's press release that says, no one is sent to prison for drug addiction and mental illness. The only mentally ill people in prison are those who have raped, murdered, or maimed innocent victims. Can you address that?
It's really, really unfortunate. And I would say that in some ways, it's kind of a classic prosecutorial kind of argumentative approach, right? Where on the face of it, he's essentially saying, okay, we are not actually charging people because they're mentally ill. Okay, fine. If that's the way you want to play it, that's right. But like, let's look at what's really going on here. First of all, we're in Portland right now. This is a city that the U.S. Department of Justice had to actually intervene because they found that the police department was engaged in high levels of inappropriate violence focused on people who are experiencing mental health problems. We have a statewide organization called Disability Rights Oregon, DRO. They released a pretty well-researched report on the experience of people who are experiencing mental health problems within our jails. You know, what they've found is really outrageous. John Foote shouldn't be sticking his head in the sand here. What we need from elected leaders is acknowledging problems. And frankly, that goes a long way. If he was to say, okay, we need to be doing better in terms of how it is we're responding to people who are struggling with addiction or mental health issues, I'm not quite sure what the solutions are, but I know we need to do better. This would be a fundamentally different conversation. But just to be in a state of denial doesn't cut it. You know, what's interesting is compare his response to something that Rod Underhill, the district attorney of Multnomah County, is doing, where he's beginning a program modeled after a program in Seattle called the Law Enforcement Assisted Diversion Program. It's a pre-booking program, kind of diversion program that's set up to say, okay, there are people who cycle in and out of our criminal justice system because they're struggling with mental health issues or addiction. And what this program does is it acknowledges that sometimes the best interventions have nothing to do with the justice system or with prosecution. It's about getting folks access to services and help so that they can point their lives in the right direction rather than dropping the criminal justice hammer on them. And that's approach this LEAD program that I feel like is the type of thing we need district attorneys to be embracing and replicating. And it's a fundamentally different approach from what we're hearing from John Foote and what we're seeing here in Multnomah County.
And it is common knowledge that our jails and prisons have become the de facto mental health institutions.
That's totally right. And you know, Karen, I was really shocked when I read that press release, because another part of the press release, John Foote explicitly denied that people of color were treated more harshly in our criminal justice system than white people. It is well understood and well documented, and there are reams and reams of data out there showing that there's wide racial disparities in how people are treated in the system.
David?
Here in Multnomah County, there's something called the RED Report. So by the county's own research, RED essentially stands for racial and ethnic disparities. And so it identified the layers of disparity based on race through every level of our criminal justice system. Now, we know there's a lot of disparity on the front end. In other words, what we know is that people of color are being arrested at much higher rates than white people. But here's the thing. So some prosecutors want to say, well, look, we're just taking the cases that police are serving us and we're prosecuting them. But we, again, expect more. It is up to prosecutors to take a step back and identify, first of all, whether or not there's serious bias happening in terms of the cases that are being handed to them, and be able to create systems to identify when they actually should be stopping the flow of disparity and actually beginning to transform and change the situation, not just continue it. So building on the fact that the county RED report that was released in 2016 was really eye-opening, and Multnomah County actually just received, I believe it's a $2 million grant, but don't quote me on that, from MacArthur to be able to continue the research around racial and ethnic disparities and begin to identify the places within the criminal justice system from the front end to the back end that are creating the disparities in order to be able to identify the right kinds of interventions. We're excited that this is happening. And I think that in some ways, the fact that it's only happening in Multnomah County speaks to how much we need to create change in other parts of the state. It also actually speaks to the level at which we need better data to be able to really assess county by county the decisions that are being made throughout the system, including in district attorney's offices, around how they're choosing cases to prosecute, how they're deciding on their plea offers, and all of the decision-making points to begin to really be able to intervene on the ways that their offices are either helping or hurting our approach to eliminating racial disparity.
If you just tuned in, you're listening to Prison Pipeline on KBOO 90.7 FM. My guests are ACLU of Oregon Executive Director David Rogers and Daniel Lukow, manager of ACLU's new campaign, They Report to You. And that is the MacArthur Foundation Racial and Ethnic Disparities Report on Multnomah County. And it did find that there is a disproportionate treatment of African Americans at every level of the criminal justice system. You said they will continue the study on this. How do you feel the DAs will respond to these reports?
I imagine that individually elected DAs may have very different opinions. Rod Underhill, the district attorney in Multnomah County, I think is taking this data very seriously and taking the challenge of figuring out how to be able to minimize racial disparity within the system. It is worth noting that the money for trying to ensure that we have the right information to be able to get at this is limited to Multnomah County, and we need statewide systems that are really being able to generate the kind of data to allow us to be able to drill in all 36 counties so we have an analysis of what's going on in multiple ways, and particularly around racial disparity.
And speaking of all 36 counties, we should give credit where credit is due. There are a number of district attorneys who want criminal justice reform.
You know, John Hummel, who's the district attorney of Deschutes County, has been very public, actually, in terms of support for a number of different reforms. For example, he was, I believe, the sole district attorney who supported grand jury transparency and the grand jury reform bill that passed the legislature here this year. This is a very important check on the ways that prosecutors actually have pretty much complete control of the grand jury process. But it's been a mystery. It's all happened behind closed doors. And now, based on the law that the legislature passed, we will now have access to recordings that happen in the grand jury process. So John Hummel was actively supporting the need for more transparency there. He's also actually stepped up and provided real critiques of the current law in Oregon that allows for non-unanimous jury convictions. We are one of only two states in the entire country that allows for non-unanimous jury convictions. And to be clear, the only other state is Louisiana. And this has deep roots, both here in Oregon and in Louisiana, based on bigotry and bias if I could just say a few things about this issue, it's interesting that, you know, many people, when they think about the justice system in the U.S., they think that we hold ourselves to high values, that when people are found guilty, it requires the state to prove guilt beyond a reasonable doubt. But here in Oregon, when you can be convicted with two people in the jury saying, I'm not so sure, and you can get 10 to 2 jury convictions, and that only happens in one other place in the country, I think that that actually really conflicts with this notion that, you know, where the state has to prove guilt beyond a reasonable doubt. And it is also worth noting that this law marginalizes the voices of jurors of color. Because in Oregon, if you're lucky, first of all, if you get one or two people of color on a jury, and if they're part of a jury conversation and they identify that there's discussion rooted in bias and prejudice and stereotypes, and they're pushing back, well, a 10-2 non-unanimous jury conviction pushes their voices to the side and renders them essentially powerless in this situation. We have got to do something about this. And I would like to see more district attorneys step up and say, you know what, this is a serious problem. This has got to change. I'm a criminal justice leader and I support the change. We cannot continue to do this. The rest of the country has figured it out. Why not Oregon?
And speaking of the legislature and what the rest of the country is doing, one thing that happened in the last legislative session was the passage of the Oregon House Bill 2355 that changed small-scale drug possession to a misdemeanor instead of a felony. And this passed despite opposition from district attorneys.
So, Karen, you bring up a very, very important point, which is that for the past 20 years, district attorneys have largely been the biggest roadblock to passing reforms at the legislature. They have fought reforms tooth and nail every step of the way. And this year, in 2017, I am excited to see that the legislature passed significant criminal justice reforms in spite of district attorney opposition. And that says something to me. It says to me that the political landscape is shifting, that the legislature is beginning to see where the public is at and the support for reform. Now it's actually time to actually get district attorneys there. And they're not going to get there until actually voters communicate very clearly to them where we're at and what it is we want.
Now, according to the Scanner article of May 2016, Kevin Neely, the spokesperson for the Oregon District Attorneys Association, said that most of the significant policies that have come down over the last 20 years in Oregon have been enacted by the voters. So he said that the district attorneys are only implementing the will of the voters.
Wow. That is not only disingenuous, it's definitely misleading. So let's talk about the most transformative law passed via ballot measure here in Oregon, which is Measure 11, which was passed in 1994. It's also worth noting 1994 is almost 25 years ago. So thinking about what voters wanted in either 1994 or 1999 and trying to equate that to what it is people want in 2017 is very, very different. And we know so much more about the ways to be able to reduce crime, to be able to hold young people accountable, for example. So let's talk about Measure 11, because that is something that district attorneys constantly fight, even modest attempts to reform Measure 11. Measure 11 has the dubious reputation of treating 15, 16, and 17-year-olds automatically as adults as soon as the prosecutor charges them with a Measure 11 offense. Well, what we know is that that runs directly in conflict with all it is that we've learned in the past 20 years about the best ways to hold young people accountable. We know we've learned a lot about adolescent brain development and that young people are much more, it's more difficult for them to make decisions, that they age out of criminal activity. We know that when you put a young person in the adult system, they're much more likely to actually commit future crime. So actually keeping them in the juvenile justice system reduces recidivism rates. So why is it that we're continuing to do something that all of the research tells us not to do? It's like, that's the thing about what we want, is that let's look towards evidence-based best practices, you know, not these kind of like tough on crime ideological positions that we're getting from DAs that bump up against not only public support, but like the research about what works. So to be clear, yes, the district attorney supported Measure 11, and you could say, you know, without maybe biting your tongue, that voters supported it as well. But they supported it in 1994, and they supported it again in 1999 when there was a kind of poorly crafted measure to change it. That was 20 years ago, and not only is the electorate different, our values are different, what we know works is different, so it's time for DAs to catch up and stop locking our system in the 1990s.
So Daniel, as manager of the campaign, they report to you. What has been happening and how can people get involved?
People should definitely go to www.theyreporttoyou.org. It's full of helpful information for folks about what our campaign stands for, how they can connect with the DAs, what DAs do, and what are ways that they can plug in. So www.theyreporttoyou.org. We also ask people to sign a pledge to vote. We have a pledge right there on our website that people sign saying that they're promising to vote in the next DA election. And if enough people sign this pledge, it communicates to candidates running for office and incumbent DAs that their voters are looking for a new approach and are looking to move beyond the failed tough on crime strategies of the 1990s. One thing that we've been doing we're really excited about is that over the course of the summer, we knocked on 15,000 doors in Washington County and Marion County. And we had conversations with voters on their own doorsteps about what they want the criminal justice system to look like and how it can be different. Most voters want to move away from tough on crime and harsh prison sentences and want to move to a system that focuses on recovery and treatment. And what we're looking to do is empower them to use their own voice to change the system by voting for DAs with that lens on.
What will a successful campaign look like?
We want to see more voters reaching out and engaging with their district attorneys. Voters already do a great job of engaging with their local legislators and with their city councilors and with their mayors. And we want to empower more voters to reach out to their own district attorneys like they would any other local elected official. And also, we like to see more district attorneys providing avenues for their voters to engage with them. District attorneys should be holding their own forums and town halls in their communities. They should be listening to their voters more often and reflecting their voters' concerns in how they conduct their job and what they advocate for in the legislature.
And let me add to that too, and it's just worth noting too, that I think that the notion of kind of what a successful campaign looks like is a moving target. Actually, our answers to that will evolve as the campaign evolves. But, you know, I would love to see more people who might think of themselves as a reform-minded candidate step up and say, you know what, I can do this, I'm going to run, and who are thinking about running as a candidate from a reform-minded perspective. So more contested races would be good, but I also want to just repeat that we're a nonpartisan organization and we do not endorse specific candidates, any candidates, whether they're DA candidates or legislative candidates. I think that ultimately, if this campaign is successful, that more voters will also be engaging DAs with a collective voice around key issues, and we'll be able to create change so that there's more transparency in how DA offices operate, so that we'll see more individual DAs feel like they have the kind of courage to be able to step out and take positions to support reforms, even if their association isn't. We also want to acknowledge, too, that the governor actually has a role to play in this, and that sometimes long-term district attorneys will step down early so that they can kind of handpick their successor. That dynamic is beginning to change, and I think that the reason is because we have a different governor, because actually it's the governor's role to be able to pick and identify the interim district attorney. And what we've seen is that from Governor Brown is that she's just not rubber stamping the handpicked choices, and that she's being more thoughtful about what people to like lift up and to identify in an interim way. The degree to which people want to drop the governor a line line and actually thank her for that thoughtful approach. It's a marked step in a different direction, and we really appreciate it.
Mm-hmm. One more time, how can people get involved? Your website?
They can go to www.theyreporttoyou.org, and they can also follow the ACLU of Oregon on Facebook or Twitter, where we provide information about our campaign.
David Rogers, Daniel Lukow, thank you so much for being on Prison Pipeline.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
I've been speaking with ACLU of Oregon Executive Director David Rogers and Daniel Lukow, manager of ACLU's new campaign, They Report to You. This is Prison Pipeline on KBOO 90.7 FM, Portland. Listen to this and previous Prison Pipeline programs at kboo.fm/prisonpipeline. Like Prison Pipeline on Facebook. Thank you to our engineers, Danielle and Mike. Good night.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Thanks for Giving, a Give Guide Happy Hour with Human Solutions, ERCO, and KBOO on Monday, November 20th at 5 p.m. at the Lagunitas Community Room in Portland. Human Solutions is partnering with KBOO and ERCO to say thank you to their donors and to celebrate being included in this year's Willamette Week Give Guide. The evening includes beer and snacks as a way of saying thanks for giving to all their supporters. Again, that's Thanks for Giving, a Give Guide Happy Hour with Human Solutions, ERCO, and KBOO on Monday, November 20th at 5 p.m. at the Lagunitas Community Room, 237 Northeast Broadway Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Hats for the Homeless donation drive. From December 1st through the 15th, five Southeast locations will collect clean, new, or gently used hats, scarves, and gloves, and the folks at Zippity News will distribute them to local shelters. Dropbox locations and more information.